What up, y'all? You're listening to Sports Talk with Trop, and I'm your host, Katie Trop. On today's bonus episode, I've compiled a few of my old lists from past shows. Today, we're going to do the Trop 10 favorite Los Angeles Lakers and Trop 10 favorite San Francisco Giants. So moving on to my Trop 10 list this week, still with the theme of my favorite players from my favorite teams, I've already done my favorite San Francisco Giants and my favorite Dallas Cowboys. So now let's move on to my Trop 10 favorite Lakers. This was another difficult list to make, except for one, of course. I pretty much always know my number one as soon as I start the list because they're my number one favorite players. But let's go ahead and start it off with number 10. As I keep saying, with all these favorite teams lists, I'm only talking about the time they are with my favorite team. So with these Lakers, we are only talking about their time with their Lakers. And at number 10, my 10th favorite Laker is Gary Payton. He played point guard for the Lakers for a short period of time, to 2003 to 2004, which was unfortunate because, you know, he basically came to the Lakers because this was at the height of their dynasty, but unfortunately, it was also the height of the Kobe versus Shaq shit. And so basically, that really tore them apart from the inside, and they were never able to win a championship with Gary Payton. But I will say, Gary Payton, when he played those couple of years, he wasn't the Gary Payton that we're used to seeing, the glove, you know, one of the greatest point guards to ever do it. But he did his part. I mean, there were games where he was the only dude because Karl Malone pretty much was injured like his entire couple of seasons he was with the Lakers. And then also in this the 2003-2004 season, Kobe and Shaq, they had a couple of injuries. So even those guys were not in games. And so Gary Payton actually took over quite a few games and helped us get quite a few wins and get into the playoffs, even though he didn't have his typical Gary Payton type career. But to me, Gary Payton is one of the greatest to ever do it. One of the greatest point guards, hands fucking down. And so me, what I remember when he signed, I was like, hell yes, we finally have Gary Payton, because the dude was amazing, especially defensively. You know, even though it was a short time there, we didn't win a championship with them, I don't give a shit. I love Gary Payton, and he's definitely on my list of Trop 10 favorite Lakers. Then at number 9 on my Trop 10 favorite Lakers, Andrew Bynum played center for the Lakers from 2005 to 2012. He was one of the last high school to NBA guys, because, you know, now you have to go to college for at least 1 year. He is one of the last to actually come straight from high school into the NBA. He's actually technically one of the youngest players ever because he was drafted at 17 years old, and he played in a couple of games when he was 18. So, but he really didn't actually start getting going until about 3 seasons into his career. He started working right off the bat once the Lakers drafted him, because he was their number one pick that season. And he was highly sought after. A lot of people wanted Bynum, but what the Lakers did is they had Kareem Abdul-Jabbar come in, and he got to be his mentor. And I mean, what a mentor to fucking have. But with Bynum, unfortunately for him, a lot of injuries to his knees are what really killed the end of his career. But Bynum, what I liked about him is that he never, like, complained. You know, when you're coming out of high school, that means you're a highly touted guy. And he didn't come in and say, yo, I'm going to take over. He was like, I just want to be a piece. And he would just go to work. And it took, like I said, it took a few seasons for him to really get going as a good player. But as his career wore on, he became a huge centerpiece for the Lakers, and he had some big games. And unfortunately, in the 2 seasons where we won the NBA Finals in 2009 and 2010, he did get injured towards the end of both of them, so he really didn't get to show what he had as a dominating figure. But he did, when he did come in, he did what he had to do. But I loved Andrew Bynum. I loved that we got to see his career develop. I just thought he was a great piece for the Lakers, especially in certain games. He would just take over, and I just thought he was an all-around solid Laker and really enjoyed his career. Then at number 8 on my Trop 10 favorite Lakers, Robert Horry. He played forward for the Lakers from 1997 to 2003. He is a seven-time NBA champion. Now, obviously, he didn't win all of those with the Lakers, three of those with the Lakers, a couple with Houston, and then a couple with the Spurs. But the guy is one of the most consistent players ever. That's why he has seven rings. You know, he's a role player. Robert Horry was not that. He's not a Kobe. He's not a Jordan. He's not a Steph Curry. He's not a LeBron. He's not the focal point of your team. But when you put Big Shot Bob in the game, you know he's giving it his all. You know he gets his hands on that ball. If it's any point in the time where it's time for a game winner, a buzzer beater, whatever the fuck, this guy's going to knock it down when it matters the most. And he did that for the Lakers. When he hit the game-winning shot in Game 4, 2002, Western Conference Finals versus the Sacramento Queens, this guy hit one of the biggest shots in Laker history ever. That's when I was like, oh, God, I love Robert Horry. I mean, I always loved him because, like I said, every time the dude came in the game, he was reliable. But Big Shot Bob, he would do that. And he did it in San Antonio, too. He did it in Houston. He was one of the most reliable players to ever play the game. That is why he is a seven-time NBA champion. Of course, teams overall, they do it. But he is an integral piece of every team he has ever been on. And he does that. Every team. And I loved his time with the Lakers. He was put in a game. He would make the big shot. But it was Game 4. 2002 Western Conference Finals against the Queens was when he had one of my favorite shots ever. Then at number 7 on my top 10 favorite Lakers, Anthony Davis. Currently plays center and power forward for the Lakers. He became a Laker in 2019. This is actually, now that I think about it, I think this is my first current player on either list. Because I usually I like to let their careers develop, but I got to say, I have loved Anthony Davis as a Laker since the day we traded for his ass. I always wanted there was rumblings that the Lakers were going to trade for him. And when it finally happened, it was like, fuck yeah. And basically, this guy's been such a focal point of this team, unless he's injured. And it just goes to show how important he is, because every time he's injured, we're not good. We don't do well. And in 2020, when we won that championship, I say this all the time. He should have won the MVP, the finals MVP, because he made some big, big, big shots and had some big, big games throughout the entirety of that playoff run, all the way through the finals, and he was the dude. He was who we went to. He was the leader. And I knew they were going to give it to LeBron because it's LeBron. And I'm not saying LeBron sucked. Of course, LeBron played a huge role as well. But I'm just saying, when Anthony Davis is healthy and in the game, he is the leader of this team. And I bet you LeBron would say the same thing. I feel like LeBron has been wanting to pass him the torch, but everybody wants to keep handing LeBron the torch back. And Anthony's standing there like, yo, I'm fucking Anthony Davis, y'all. I play excellent on defense. That's what I love about this guy. He's great defensively, offensively, in the paint. He is amazing. It just sucks when he gets injured. But that just is the name of the game. But I love Anthony Davis, and I'm thrilled he's a Laker, and I hope he stays a Laker for the rest of his career. Then at number 6 on my top 10 favorite Lakers, Ron Artest. I know he goes by a different name now, but I don't give a shit. He was Ron Artest when he played in the league. He was a forward with the Lakers from 2009 to 2013, I always loved Ron Artest. Even after him running into the stands and punching the fan, I'm just talking about his general game on the court. He is one of the best defenders that this league has ever seen. I mean, Ron Artest in his prime, he would lock it down. And he would lock it down against good-ass players. I mean, like LeBron players. Like this guy, he would lock it down, and in that 2010 championship, he was a big part of that playoff run. He actually is basically one of the big reasons why we won Game 7 of that 2010 NBA championship, because he made some big three-point shots that we needed in the end. And Ron Artest, man, he also had one of my favorite moments after that 2010 NBA Finals in his post-game press conference. Because, you know, this is his first championship that he's ever won, so he's excited as fuck. But there is this one play where Kobe passes him the ball, and then he hits not the game-winning shot, but he hits a pivotal shot, we'll say. It's a shot that, because going down to the end, it was like a back and forth, and it was like whoever was getting these shots was getting the win. And Artest was a huge key role in this. And he goes, in his post-game press conference, he's like, oh my God, I see Kobe with the ball, and Kobe passes me the ball! Kobe passes me the ball! And I make the shot, and I go, woo! Like, it's one of my favorite moments ever, because you're just like, he sounds like a little kid, and that's what's so great about sports is because, I mean, that's what we all did when we were little kids. You're pretending that Kobe's passing you the ball, you got the game winner, and he got to do it in real life. So I loved me Ron Artest. Then at number five on my top 10 favorite Lakers. Now this is why I like the Lakers, is Magic Johnson. He, of course, played point guard from 1979 to 1991, made a brief comeback in 1996. Unfortunately, I feel like we definitely would have gotten some more years out of Magic, of course, had he not contracted the HIV virus. But and of course, I was born in 85, so I really only got a couple years of Magic Johnson, unfortunately. But that is why I like the Lakers. I used to watch Lakers games with my aunt. She was a Lakers fan, and she was a big Magic Johnson fan, and so basically ever since then, I was hooked. And so like I said, I only got a couple years of watching Magic, but he's why I like the Lakers. He had to make my list. I know most people, of course, wouldn't have him down this far below, but this isn't a GOAT list. This is just my favorite players, and obviously since I didn't get to see the majority of his career, it's not like some of these other guys above him who have got a shit ton of memories of them winning championships and stuff, but Magic is obviously one of the greatest Lakers, one of the greatest players, and he is why I am a Laker fan. Then at number four on my top 10 favorite Lakers, Derek Fisher. Played point guard with the Lakers from 1996 to 2004, and this is one of the most reliable players we ever had. He was a part of this dynasty, and nobody really talks about him, but if you are a Laker fan, you know he was just as important as Kobe and Shaq was to this team. Just like Devin George, Luke Walton, there were a lot of guys in this dynasty that mattered. But Derek Fisher, I feel like, was the glue that held it together. I feel like he was the leader of the pack of this team. And he was so reliable. He would knock down game winners. The three-point shot to him was like it was nothing. And you just knew when he was in the game, we had a shot. And one of my favorite Derek Fisher moments was actually Game 5 of the Western Conference Semifinals versus the San Antonio Spurs, one of the most exciting games I've ever seen in my life. This is when the Spurs also were in their dynasty run with Tim Duncan, Tony Parker, Manu Ginobili. You got my Lakers, Shaq, Kobe, D-Fish. And the end of this game is just boom, boom, shot, shot. I remember Spurs get the ball back with 11 seconds left. Freaking Tim Duncan throws up this random three-pointer to take the fucking lead. The Lakers have 0.4 seconds left on the clock. There is no way they're making this shot. But you know for sure they're going to Kobe. That is all I'm saying. I remember watching this game. They're going to Kobe. They're going to Kobe. They're going to Kobe. They're going to Kobe. Whistle blows. Ball goes to Derek Fisher. Because everybody else is thinking exactly what I'm thinking. They're going to Kobe. They're going to Kobe. They're going to Kobe. No, they go to Fish, who shoots. The second he grabs the ball, it's like, boom, 0.4 seconds, hits the game-winning shot, literally runs off the fucking court because it is one of the most amazing things ever done in basketball history. And that's just Derek Fisher, man. But, man, I still remember that. Oh, it was such a great game. But Derek Fisher got the better of the San Antonio Spurs in Game 5 that night. Then at number three on my top 10 favorite Lakers, Pau Gasol. Played power forward and center from 2008 to 2014 with the Los Angeles Lakers. He was such a great Laker. The second we traded for him, we were good. We were finally a legit team. It's like we traded Shaq away, and we had this lull where we just were not that good. We were just always on the outskirts, and it's like Kobe's playing his heart out, scoring 81 fucking points. Are we ever going to be good again? And then we get Pau fucking Gasol, and we never look back. One of the most reliable Lakers. Fucking loved him. He was so huge for that run, that 2009 finals, that 2010 finals. And he was Kobe's right-hand man. Kobe probably trusted Powell more than anybody in his career. I would go out on a limb and say that. That he probably did, because if you're a Lakers fan and you watch Kobe play, you know he had his trust issues with other teammates. I don't think he had those issues with Pau Gasol ever. I think he always knew Pau was there, and Pau was there. I fucking love Pau Gasol. One thing I always loved to do is he would have this big, huge block, or just run down the lane and smash a fucking slam dunk in there. I would always go, "You have just been gasoled. You have been gasoled. You have been gasoled. You have all just been gasoled." Because he just would get this look on his face where it's like, "Ah, you have just been gasoled." I used to love fucking shouting that by myself, by the way. But yeah, loved me some Pau Gasol. Then at number two on my top 10 favorite Lakers, Shaquille O'Neal. Played center for the Lakers from 1996 to 2004. I mean, one of the most game-changing NBA players ever. One of the most dominating centers to ever do it. An MVP, just a game changer in all ways, shapes, and forms. It doesn't matter how it ended. He was a phenomenal player. And I feel like we got peak Shaq too. We got to see all, not even just the game winners, but it's like the dude would score 60 fucking points in some games. And just like, there would be times where it's like, who can stop him? I remember when Yao Ming came into the league and everybody's like, "Oh, it's going to be a battle for Shaq." Fuck no. Shaq made Yao Ming his bitch on so many fucking occasions. It's not even funny. Shaq was so fun to watch. Shaq, it just was fantastic, and he was actually what I would call the perfect Laker too, because he embraces the superstardom of it all and being famous. And you know, he also he likes to shake hands with fans, and I know this as a fact because I actually have met Shaq once. I was in LA. It was actually his last season with the Lakers, so this had to have been like 2004, 2003, I guess. And I'm at the Beverly Center, which is it's a mall in Beverly Hills, of course. And we're walking around, and I remember I'm walking out of Guess, and coming up the escalator is this big-ass motherfucker, and I go, "Oh my God, that's Shaq." And so my mom and I were walking out of Guess basically at the time he's getting off of the escalator, and we're walking right next to him. I'm like, "Oh my God, you are so awesome." And my mom hesitantly goes, can I get a picture of you with her?" And he goes, "No, you may not." And I go, Can I shake your hand?" And he's like, "Yes, you can." And he reaches out with his big ass fucking hand. I shake his hand, and my hand literally like disappears in his, because I'm 5'2", 105 pounds, and he is 7 foot tall and like 325. So yeah, that's a pretty interesting look there. But I mean, I obviously, you know, he was just dressed down, and really, honestly, I can see why he didn't want to take a picture with anybody. It was really fucking cool. And then when we were leaving, and we were waiting for our car, he was also waiting for his car too. And he was standing there. I didn't say anything to him, of course, but it's like, just like, whoa. But he was really cool. He was really nice. He did not give a shit that fans were at least wanting to shake his hand, because not only did he shake my hand, I was like one of the first people to spot him. But then I saw him elsewhere in the mall, I think at a jewelry store, and there were like five other people mobbing him. And he had a big smile on his face, shaking their hands as well, and just chit-chatting with them. So Shaq not only was an excellent basketball player, but I think he was the perfect Laker just to embrace being a dude who's playing for one of the biggest teams. He's playing for, I mean, he didn't play for Showtime Lakers, but I mean, the Lakers are Showtime. They are the fucking Lakers. And so he was the star of the team, and he embraced it, man. And like I said, I met him once, and it was a great experience for me. But at number one on my top 10 favorite Lakers, I think you all knew this. I mean, hello. Obviously, I've been doing my Jack Tatum intro since it's football season now, but you do know my other intro song is called Mamba Mentality. I've discussed my love for Kobe Bryant on here so much, I kind of feel like you had to have known number one is going to be Kobe Bryant, who was a lifetime Laker from 1996 to 2016. And if you know me, you know I love Kobe. He is why. I mean, I I told you, Magic is why I love the Lakers. Kobe is why I love basketball. I have not enjoyed basketball since 2016. I still watch it, of course, but I have not enjoyed it in the same way that I used to when Kobe played. Kobe, even in the years where the Lakers sucked, Kobe was still worth watching. Kobe has so many moments. It's insane for me. I've already broken down so many different moments of him. It's like I don't know how many times I could do it. But yeah, Kobe is, I just loved watching him play. I loved his grit. I loved his tenacity. I loved that he thought he could literally take over a game. And it didn't matter how many times he would miss a shot, he would go right back up and throw that same fucking shot up. It didn't matter how shitty his teammates were around him. He still thought he was making a comeback. That's why he scored 81 points, because he's like, I can do this. I know I can fucking do this. I'm Kobe goddamn Bryant. So for me, Kobe is just basketball. I loved watching his entire career from start to finish, even in the bad years, even in the injury-riddled years, even in the end. There was not a bad time for me watching Kobe Bryant play basketball. I remember when it was Kobe versus Shaq. I was team Kobe. I will tell Shaq to his face. I was and am still team Kobe all day, all night, every single fucking day. Always, always, always. And I remember when it was those two, I was like, the Lakers better not get rid of Kobe. They got rid of Shaq. I was cool with it. Then there was those couple of times where he had those contract negotiations where it looked like he was going to be going somewhere else. I'm like, the Lakers better not get rid of Kobe. I'm going to be pissed off if they get rid of Kobe. Thankfully, they did not. Even in the end of his career, which was marred by injuries, and he wasn't the same Kobe, I did not give a shit how shitty the Lakers were. You do not get rid of Kobe Bryant. And I feel like the front office and the ownership always knew that, because Kobe is a Laker. He is a Laker for life. We could not have stood to see him in any other uniform other than a Los Angeles Lakers uniform. So Kobe is everything to me when it comes to basketball. And I kid you not, I have not enjoyed basketball as much as I did after his retirement. Because I just don't think anybody plays like him. I don't think anybody plays as hard as him. I don't think anybody cares as much as him. I don't think a lot of people will sacrifice as much as he did. And he was excellent to watch. I loved Kobe still to this day. And I don't think there's ever a player going to surpass him for me personally. So Kobe Bryant, number one, that should not be surprising to you at all if you listen to the show or if you know me personally, because I'm Kobe all day. I got two fucking Kobe tattoos on me. That just tells you right there. You get me Kobe Bryant anything, it's going on my wall or my shelves or whatever the fuck. Kobe, Kobe, Kobe. All right, and moving on to the list this week, I decided to, I'm going to do some fun lists over the next few lists that I do. I'm going to do this week, top 10 favorite San Francisco Giants. And I'm going to do my favorite Cowboys and favorite Lakers as well. Those will be the next ones. But I decided, you know, it would be a good idea to just kind of rattle off on my favorite players throughout my life. Guys that I've just always been, they're the reason why I like the sports that I like. They've given me great memories over the years. And so since it's baseball season, even though the Giants are terrible this year, let's start it off with my top 10 favorite San Francisco Giants. And I was able to find 10. At first, I was like, am I going to do just five? But then when I started to kind of compile the list, I was like, wait a second, this is going to be easy to put together 10. So here we go. I decided to do 10. So my top 10 favorite San Francisco Giants, beginning with number 10, that would be Brian Wilson. He was the closer for the San Francisco Giants from 2006 to 2012. By the way, I'm only going to be discussing these guys, San Francisco Giants career. A few of them did have, spend their entire careers with the Giants, but a lot of them did end up going somewhere else or began somewhere else in their career. I'm not going to be talking about that time. I'm only going to be talking about my San Francisco Giants memories. Because Brian Wilson, unfortunately, ended his career as a Los Angeles Dodger, which was just weird as fuck because the Dodgers are our rival, but you got to do what you got to do. But anyways, Brian Wilson was one of the most dominating closers when he would come into the game in his heyday. He won a couple World Series with us. He won the 2010 World Series, which was the first time the San Francisco Giants had ever won a World Series in San Francisco. And so I just remember him closing out the last game of the World Series, and he's right there, Buster Posey running at him like, holy shit, we just won. But you always knew when Brian Wilson would come in that it was going to be lights out. It was always difficult for anybody to score on him, and he was Mr. Reliable. He also had that big-ass beard. He was just kind of a weirdo who would just was kind of an out-there guy, but you just loved his weirdness. And I most of all loved when he would come into the game because you knew chances are ain't nobody scoring on Brian Wilson. Then at number 9 on my top 10 favorite San Francisco Giants, Pablo Sandoval. He played third base from 2008 to 2014 and then came back for another little stint with the Giants from 2017 to 2020. He was the World Series MVP in 2012. And what I loved about Pablo Sandoval, he was so reliable. When he came up to the plate, it wasn't just home runs that he would crush, but he was able to get guys home. He was always able to get on base. And he just was a real, especially in that 2012 season, man, like that playoff run, he just was so reliable. That's why he was the MVP of the World Series, because he made so many clutch hits. And he just every time he came up to the plate, you knew that some chances are something good is going to happen when Pablo Sandoval, the Panda, because that's another great thing about him. That was his nickname, the Panda. I mean, hello, who doesn't fucking love panda bears? But Pablo Sandoval, one of my favorite Giants. Then at number 8 on my top 10 favorite San Francisco Giants, Jason Schmidt. He was a starting pitcher for the Giants from 2001 to 2006. Another guy who ended his career as a Los Angeles Dodger. Just very fucking weird for me. But Jason Schmidt was one of the most reliable pitchers we had at this time. The Giants were actually a pretty competitive team throughout the majority of this time he was there. They even went to the World Series in 2002. And it's just Schmidt, he was so hard to score on. He would go toe-to-toe with some of the best pitchers in the game. And I just would love when he would pitch because I knew chances are we're getting the win. And even if it was a close one, if Jason Schmidt's in the game, you know things are probably going to be a good outcome. Then at number 7 on my top 10 favorite San Francisco Giants, Matt Cain. He was a starting pitcher from 2005 to 2017. He threw a perfect game back in 2012. As a matter of fact, 2012 was a really solid year for him, but he threw the perfect game in 2012 versus the Houston Astros on June 3rd of 2012. The Giants won the World Series in 2012. He was a part of the first two World Series teams, the 2010 and 2012 teams. And he was just a strikeout king. I mean, he talk about like guys who are real difficult to score on. Matt Cain would just come into a game and it would be so quick too. Most of his games were pretty quick, but it was just, he was such a reliable pitcher, especially at the beginning of his career. At the end of his career, he just suffered so many injuries. 2005 to 17, that's a long ass career in baseball, especially for a pitcher. But like I said, once he started to get to his last few seasons, especially like the last 3 to 5 years of his career, it was just injury riddled. But for the most part, man, Matt Cain, he came up with the Giants. I remember when he first started with the Giants. I remember he even had some stints in the bullpen as well. But he was just such a reliable pitcher, and he showed out when he could in the playoffs. And I loved when Matt Cain would come into the game. Then at number 6 on my top 10 favorite San Francisco Giants, JT Snow. Played first base from 1997 to 2005. He just was such a reliable ass player, and it also didn't hurt that he was a fine ass motherfucker as well. JT Snow, hot as hell, and not only was he a great player, but I couldn't help but be excited when he would come up to bat for numerous reasons, and one of them being he was fine as hell. Then at number 5 on my top 10 favorite San Francisco Giants, I have Will Clark. played first base from 1986 to 1993. And for me, that is really where my San Francisco Giants fandom began. I used to watch Giants games with my Aunt Dale and then also my grandma and my grandpa. They were Giants fans, so that's kind of how I became one. I just, you know, would watch games with them all the time. And then also, I collected baseball, basketball, and football cards growing up. And when it came to baseball cards, I always wanted Will Clark or Nolan Ryan. If I were getting baseball cards, you know, a pack of baseball cards, I remember my Aunt Dale actually had this amazing baseball card collection, and she had a huge collection of Will Clark and Nolan Ryan ones, and I loved all of them. I actually do still have those cards because she died years ago, but so of course I took them on. Will Clark and Nolan Ryan, those were the baseball cards I wanted. And so for me, Will Clark was where it all started. He was the face of the Giants basically in those late 80s, early 90s. I mean, he was one of the most reliable players on the field. I mean, he's just one of the most reliable players, hands down. Every team he went to, he was just one of the top guys. But Will Clark holds a special place in my heart just because he is where it all started for me. Then at number four in my top 10 favorite San Francisco Giants, Tim Lincecum, starting pitcher from 2007 to 2015. What I loved about Tim Lincecum is when he started and he came up, the Giants sucked ass. The only good thing about the Giants for a long period of time was that Tim Lincecum would come into the game and just smash motherfuckers. This guy won the Cy Young 2 years in a row, 2008 and 2009, and the Giants sucked fucking ass. But yet every time he would come into the game, boom, it would be a win. And he would just strike motherfuckers out. That's what he was really known for. So just his straight up domination. And I remember Tim Lincecum's another dude. I remember when he came up. I remember the day he started. And watching him, it was so great once the Giants got to the World Series, because to see a dude like him who never complained about being on a losing team, he would just go out, do his thing. He never requested a trade. He never was like, this person's wrong. This coach is wrong. This manager sucks. He never had an issue. He would just go out, pitch, and do his thing. And when the Giants won all three of their World Series, 2010, 2012, and 2014, he was a part of all those teams. Now, the 2010 season, he had a dominating playoff run. I mean, from start to finish, he just killed motherfuckers. Then the last couple of World Series, there was even a point he was in the bullpen, just coming in at relief. But still, he went hard. And he just was such... I loved Tim Lincecum. Loved him. Just because, like I said, I have so much respect for him for coming out and being the best pitcher in baseball on the worst fucking team in baseball. So shout out to Tim Lincecum for giving me something exciting to root for in those really down, down years. Then at number three on my top 10 favorite San Francisco Giants, Buster Posey. Played catcher from 2009 to 2019, took the 2020 season off, and then came back for 2021. Hands down, one of the greatest Giants ever. One of the greatest catchers ever. I mean, he pretty much has every accomplishment you possibly could have at the catching position. He was a great hitter. He was a great catcher. He was great defensively. He was great offensively. He was a leader of the team. And he was always, these Matt Cain and Tim Lincecum, these guys that I've rattled off at pitching, Brian Wilson as well, Buster Posey is a huge part of why they were so good. And I guarantee you they would say the same thing that I just said about Posey. He is one of the greatest to ever do it. When he comes up for voting in the Hall of Fame, and we already know, if you don't know, I hate the Baseball Writers of America. They are such cunts when it comes to letting people into the Hall of Fame. Buster Posey is one of those motherfuckers who better be unanimous. I know they don't like to do the unanimous thing, but I'm sorry. There are zero reasons why you should be voting against Buster Posey in the Hall of Fame, because this guy checks every single box, and he was good from the start. He even won Rookie of the Year, okay? So he's been good since day fucking one. The only reason why he petered out at the end of his career is due to injuries. So that, and that's most careers at the end of the day. But Buster Posey, hands down, one of the greatest to ever do it. Then at number two in my top 10 favorite San Francisco Giants, Barry Bonds. Played left field from 1993 to 2007. He was such an exciting player to watch. Just watching him smash home runs out of the park. And yes, I know, steroids, blah, blah, blah. I will reiterate with the steroids thing. Yes, they absolutely cheated. But at the end of the day, it was completely encouraged by every single level of person in baseball, from the owners to the managers to the trainers to the players to every aspect of baseball. I'm sure even the agents and all of them were in on it too. So to me, I have no issues with people, you know, putting asterisks or even mentioning Barry Bonds and steroids or Roger Clemens or all the guys in this era. But I mean, it's really actually difficult to find guys from that era who weren't tainted by steroids. So to me, it doesn't bother me as much, but I wouldn't be, if you're a person who hates Barry Bonds and all those guys in the steroid era because you think they ruined the game, I can't argue against that, because technically they kind of did. But then you look at a guy like Aaron Judge and you go, that just goes to show how fucking great that guy is, because he's doing what they did without the steroids. You know what I'm saying? But anyways, Barry Bonds, to me, I loved watching him come up to bat. It was exciting every single time, and it would piss you off every single time once they would walk him. It was just always the four-finger walk. There would be some times where even Barry would know, oh, great, I'm getting walked. That's just how dangerous he was at the plate. I will never forget the season he hit 73 home runs in 2001. I actually remember watching the moment with my grandma, because we knew it was going to happen. And we knew it was happening any day. And I remember we were like, holy shit, he just did it. And then when his career home runs are 762, which is also the record. And just watching him go on that run was just something else. And it was fun. And I just really enjoyed his time as a San Francisco Giant. And regardless of the whole steroid thing, it just is what it is. That was the era of baseball. And I don't hold it against them as much as others do. But like I said, can't argue with you if you have issues with those guys from that era. But you should then also have issues with the owners, with the managers. And there's also other players right along with them who maybe didn't even get caught. But if you got issues with the players themselves taking the steroids, you need to have issues with every member of Major League Baseball in that period of time, including the commissioner as well. An asshole who is in the fucking Hall of Fame, but none of the steroid era guys are. Such hypocritical bullshit. But anyways, let's get to my number one favorite, top 10 favorite San Francisco Giant. Number one, with a bullet. There is nobody I love more than Madison fucking Bumgarner. Madison fucking Bumgarner. Mad Bum. Love number 40. Starting pitcher from 2009 to 2019. This is another guy right there with Brian Wilson, Matt Cain, and Tim Lincecum, who I remember his first day. I remember his first start. And I remember he started off kind of meh. You didn't really know what you were going to get from the dude. But as his career went on, this guy became the ace of this, and he would go toe-to-toe. He and Kershaw, back in the day when it was Giants, Dodgers, and they were on the same playing field, they were both good, battling it out for the division, and you've got two of the top-tier pitchers, Bumgarner and Kershaw, going up against each other. It would be beauty. But what I love most about Madison Bumgarner is the 2014 season, but most notably, the 2014 playoff run. This dude basically won the World Series all by himself. Don't get me wrong. This Giants team was pretty damn good, obviously. Made it to the World Series. But this guy, he knew he was on some. He knew he was the best player on the field, and he made sure every time he started a game, he was that dude. But he even came in relief to win Game 7. He was the 2014 World Series MVP and the NLCS MVP, and that's just because he absolutely obliterated everyone. In this playoff run, he went 26 and a two-thirds scoreless innings, which broke a 90-year record that would ultimately end up going 32 and a two-thirds inning when he would finally get scored on in Game 1 of the World Series. But basically, in the World Series against the Kansas City Royals, who were also a damn good team at the time, Bumgarner pitched in Game 1, got the win. Game 5 was a complete game shutout. Now, when I tell you that this motherfucker dominated this playoff run, it was so hard to score on him. You knew every time Bum was coming up, it was confidence to the highest degree. So Game 7 rolls around. And he even says, because this is just 2 days, he's pitched in Game 5, a complete game shutout. He went all 9 innings and pitched like a motherfucker. Game 7 rolls around 2 days later, and he even says in his press conference, if they need me to come in for a relief role, I'm ready to do it. And that gave me such goosebumps because I knew this dude, like, he was making the playoff run of his life, and he knew if it comes down to it, I'm going in there and I'm going to be that dude. And Madison Bumgarner was that dude. Game 7, 5th inning, Bum gets the call, and it's a close one too. I mean, I think the Giants had like a 1-run lead, 2-run lead. It was close. That's why we had to get him in there. And this guy came in and you could not score a run on him, and he literally won the 2014 World Series for us. It was one of the greatest runs ever, and I will never forget when Buster Posey goes running at him at the end of that game, and I'm like, if anybody else is the MVP of this game, that's blasphemy. Now, of course, like I said, he won the MVP of that World Series, as he should have, because he did that all. That was Bum carried the Giants throughout that entire playoff run, and it was magic. He only gave up 1 run in 21 World Series innings. 1 run in 21 innings of the World Series. That is how crazy Bum was. I also love his attitude. He's a badass motherfucker. And I just always loved him. He was always, he just was actually doing an interview with the Giants broadcast over the weekend because they were celebrating the 2014 World Series, which was a 10-year anniversary. I was like, shit, 10 years. That's the last time the Giants won the World Series. But he was doing an interview, and it was just like, man, I wish you could go right back out there and pitch. Now, I know he's not what he used to be because also the end of his career was marred by injuries, as I keep saying, most of them end that way. But man, I loved Mad Bum. I loved Mad Bum. I've got me a Mad Bum jersey. I'm going to be getting me a Mad Bum tattoo because I have tattoos dedicated to all my favorites, sports athletes of all time. And I've already got an Aikman one. I've already got a Kobe one. Actually, I have 2 Kobe ones. I have a Vince Young one. And I have an idea that I'm going to do for a Madison Bumgarner one. So, yeah, I love Madison Bumgarner. He gave me some of the best memories just watching this guy come up and just mow everybody down. But those are my top 10 favorite San Francisco Giants of all time. So, yeah, I mean, and that's just favorites. That obviously, this is not a goat list. This is just all guys who made me a Giants fan, whose careers I watched coming up, or just where it started for me with Will Clark. It's just, these are guys, and there could have been more. I left so many guys off the list that I just really enjoyed watching, you know, all my 39 years of life. But there you have it, my top 10 favorite San Francisco Giants of all time.